Welcome to the Tori Mecha Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Besser, and today we'll be studying Yirmiyahu Perek Kaf Pet, Chapter 22. In the previous perek, we saw a scene set late in Yirmiyahu's career at a time when Tzidkiyahu was holding out against the Babylonian onslaught against Jerusalem. Now, after speaking about the corruption in the time of Tzidkiyahu, this perek deals with the three kings who ruled before Tzidkiyahu, all descendants of Yoshio, the righteous king, who were also corrupt, and who, like Tzidkiyahu, were also punished. This perek is an overview of the corruption of the past kings of Judea after Yoshio's time, and tells us what happened to each of them and why. The nevuah of Perek 22 is meant to be a lesson. Just like back in Perek Gimel, Chapter 3, Malchut Yehuda was held accountable for not watching what happened to Malchut Yisrael and recognizing that their exile came because of their sins. So too, each king of Judea was able to watch what happened to the king before him and should have drawn a lesson from the terrible fate that each king met. It is fitting that this perek follows the nevuah against the last of the kings, Tzidkiyahu, in whose time the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. Tzidkiyahu, who is not mentioned in this perek, had the most time to learn his lesson and didn't. But each king before him was both responsible for his own actions and for not learning the lessons of the past. Just to quickly review the history and where we are. After Yoshio is killed by Paro Necho of Egypt, his son Jehoahaz takes over until he too is deposed by Paro Necho. The ruler of Egypt then anoints Jehoiakim, Yoshio's oldest son, who rules for 11 years. Late in his reign, he rebels against Babylonia and is dragged away in chains and dies on his way into exile. His son Jehoiachin takes over for 3 months and continues his father's rebellion until he too is captured by Babylonia and dragged off to jail. The Babylonians then anoint Tzidkiyahu, the third son of Yoshio, to be their vassal king. Ultimately, he rebels too, and the Babylonians kill him, destroy Yerushalayim and the Beit HaMikdash, an event that we commemorate for all time on Tisha B'Av, the ninth day of the month of Av. In the beginning of this perek, chapter 22, Hashem tells Yirmiyahu, "Raid Beit Melch Yehuda, v'dibarta sham et ha'davar hazeh." Yirmiyahu is told to leave the Beit HaMikdash and travel down the hill towards Ir David, where the king's palace was, to speak the following nevuah. If anyone's ever visited Ir David, you'll note that to look up to the Makom HaMikdash, the place where the Beit HaMikdash stands, you have to look up a big hill. So if Yirmiyahu is at the Beit HaMikdash, Hashem would have had to tell him, go down, downhill to the king's palace. This also signifies going down, signifies that the level that the king is on is also sinking. The king here is not named, while later in the perek, there are specific nevuot to each of the named king. It seems that the first part of the perek is an overview. It's to a general king of Yehuda. This is what the kings of Yehuda should be like. This is what's expected of them. This is how they should act. Yirmiyahu tells them in verse 3, Ko amar Hashem, so says Hashem, Asu mishpat utzdaka, do righteousness and justice, v'hatzilu gazul miyad asuk, v'ger yatom v'almana, al tonu v'al techamsu, v'dam naki al tishbachu b'makom hazeh. It's up to you, kings of Yehuda, to set an example and to set policy that you will only be righteous, that your people should only be righteous. Take out the robbery, the money that you've stolen, the corruption from your own government. Stop oppressing the widow, the stranger, the orphan. Could you imagine people were really oppressing the widow, the stranger, and the orphan, the people who couldn't take care of themselves instead of helping them? They would oppress them. They were easy to take advantage of. And also, he says, stop spilling innocent blood. And whether that was by their own hands, they actually murdered, which I'm sure they did, or creating a society where people couldn't move ahead because the society was so stacked against them with corruption that they end up dying of starvation. They end up dying because they can't get enough food. They can't take care of themselves. And says Yirmiyahu, this is a terrible society to create. This is what you have created. It's your job to do mishpat and tzedakah, justice and righteousness. That is the job of the king. This is similar to the message that Yirmiyahu gave Tzidkiyahu at the end of last parak. This is the secret to a long-lasting dynasty, the secret to having your son rule after you, the secret to a strong and prosperous kingdom. And it's not a secret at all. It's what the prophets have been saying over and over for years. The wealth of your kingdom depends on how you treat the poor. The strength of your kingdom depends on how you treat the weak. Too many times, the kings had it backwards. They turned a blind eye to people mistreating those weaker than them. They may have even participated, exulting in how strong and wealthy their country was, but it was only temporary. A corrupt society will not survive. Yirmiyahu describes how Hashem will not hesitate to punish his beloved kingdom, one who at a time was like the heights of the mountains of Lebanon to him. But now they're corrupted and have a loss of values. He pictures a scene where the destruction is so complete that strangers walk by and they look at it as if it's a museum exhibit. And he says in Pasuk Ched, V'amru ishal re'ehu, people turn to each other and they'll say, wow, al na'asa Hashem. Why did Hashem do this? La'ir ha'gdola hazot. Look at this great city. How did it come to ruins? And the answer will be, V'amru, people will respond, al asher azvu et brit Hashem elokechem. They left the covenant with Hashem their God, v'yishtachavu le'elohim acherim v'yavdum. And they bowed down to foreign gods and served them. This theme of brit, of covenant, shows up over and over in Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu emphasizes that B'nai Israel and Hashem once made a covenant, both in the times of the desert, again when they entered Eretz Israel, and it was renewed in the time of Yoshiyahu. The covenant said that the land of Israel is a gift, a grand experiment, to create a monotheistic, just society that could be a light to the nations, a stalwart against the non-ethical polytheistic societies of the time. Israel, the land of Israel, was given on contingency that this would be how it was used. Hashem doesn't need another land that's going to be corrupt just like all the surrounding lands. And now, what have they done? They've become just like their neighbors. They're so far from their purpose now, the society is getting more and more corrupt until finally the land of Israel will spit them out and Hashem will no longer keep his bargain to protect them. He will leave them to the forces of the world to conquer. Yirmiyahu's first message in this parak is directed to Yehoahaz, who he calls Shalom. Yirmiyahu says in Pasuk Yud, verse 10, Al tivku lamet, v'al tinadu lo, b'cho b'cho. Lahaloch, ki lo yashuv od v'ra'ad eretz moladato. Don't cry for those who die. Cry for those who are exiled, who will never again see their birthplace. What he means is, Yoshio's death was unbelievably sad, but at least Yoshio died doing what he believed in, and he had an honorable burial. Yehoahaz did not follow in his father's ways, and he was exiled, never to be returned. The message to Yehoahaz is short, as he only ruled for 3 months, and he did not have that much time to make his mark. The next message to Yehoiakim, which begins in Pasuk Yud Gimel, verse 13, is much more pointed and accusatory. Yehoiakim was completely immoral and ruled for 11 years, enough time to really make his mark. Says Yirmiyahu in Pasuk Yud Gimel, Hoi bo nebe to belo tzedek, va'aliotav belo mishpat, v're'ehu ya'avod chinam, upa'alo lo yitain lo. Yehoiakim in this pasuk is accused of building a palace with no justice and working his people for free and not giving them their wages. Yehoiakim here built a palace using slave labor, not compensating the workers that he employed. This type of building is bad, but remember, Yehoiakim was living under Egyptian occupation in the beginning of his reign. In order to punish the Judeans for electing Yehoahaz, the king that came before him, was clearly a king that Parah despised, probably because he was nationalistic and anti-Egypt, like his father Yoshio, Parah Nahal levied a heavy tax on the country. The people suffered from this economic hardship, especially as their world was crashing down around them, having lost Yoshio and Yehoahaz in less than 3 months. It is then that Yehoiakim chooses to build himself a grand new palace, perhaps in Ramat Rachel, says the Dat Mikra, where they found archaeological digs of a fantastic palace. And to add insult to injury, Yehoiakim doesn't pay the workers that he forces to build it. These were the workers that were suffering from Paro's heavy tax as Yehoiakim lounges in luxury. This is just one example of Jehoiakim's cruelty, as the pasuk can also be understood not only about someone who builds a palace with injustice, but Jehoiakim also built a society, a legacy of injustice. He taught by example that people can and should take advantage of whomever they can to get what they want. Yirmiyahu chastises Jehoiakim by comparing him to his righteous father, Yoshiyahu, in verses 15 and 16. And he says, Hatimloch? Do you think you were more of a king, ki atamit chareh ba'arez, because you compete in cedar, that your palace is so fancy? Do you think you're a better king because you have this grand palace? Look around you, Jehoiakim, says Yirmiyahu in Pasuk 16. Dan dina niv evyon. Your father, Yoshiyahu, cared about the poor people. Aztov. That's why he was good. Then all is well. Halohi hada'adoti, Ne'um Hashem. That's what it means to know God. The real mark of a king is not what he has, but how he leads. Not what his palace looks like, but how he teaches. His example. Jehoiakim, he didn't matter. It didn't matter to him how he got what he got. And therefore, says Yirmiyahu, your gains, what you've gotten are ill-gotten gains. You've gotten them by committing fraud and violence. That's how you've gotten what you've gotten. And do you think that that makes you a good king? Unlike Yoshiyahu, whose death caused a whole nation to burst into tears, whom we mourn for until this day, we say Akina on the death of Yoshiyahu on Tisha B'Av. No one will mourn you, Jehoiakim, says Yirmiyahu. You are going to have a kvura chamor, the burial of a donkey. You'll be left lying on the side of the road, uncared for and unburied. A fitting end to a person who moved the Jews so much closer to the Horban by heightening the injustice in society. The last section of the Nevuah is directed towards Jehoiachin, called Kenaya in this Nevuah. It's the same name, Jehoiachin Kenaya. Yirmiyahu tells Jehoiachin sarcastically to go climb the great mountains of Lebanon and shout out there to all of his allies, maybe one of them will come and help them. At this time, the only possible saviors from Babylonia had been destroyed. There was nowhere to go for help anymore. Jehoiachin, too, will be exiled from his homeland and never see it again, just like his father Jehoiakim and his uncle Jehoahaz. The rejection of Jehoiachin is so complete that Yirmiyahu says to him in Pasuk Kaf Dalet, verse 24, Chai ani, Ne'um Hashem, I swear to you by the name of Hashem, ki im yiyeh Kenayahu ben Jehoiakim, melch Yehuda, chutam al yad yimini, ki misham et kancha. Even if Jehoiachin was the signet ring on my right hand, even if he was the ring with which I used to sign documents, I would throw him off and throw him to the winds. And then he says, Unetaticha biyad mevakshev nafshecha, I'll give you over into the hands of those who seek your soul, biyad asher ata yagor mipnehem, those who you are scared of, biyad Nebuchadnezzar melech Babel ubiyad hakazdim, in the hands of Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babel, and the Chaldeans. The repetition, if you heard in the last two psukim, 24 and 25, the word yad, the word hand, is referred to over and over. This refers back to Yitziat Mitzrayim, the redemption from Egypt, where Hashem took the Jews out biyad chazakah, with a strong hand, pushing away all their enemies and saving them with his own hand. Here Hashem says that even if Jehoiachin started on his hand, on God's own hand, he would rip him off and allow those who were chasing him to grab him, signifying the lack of God's providence that Jehoiachin will earn. What this parak is about failure of leadership. Each of the kings, the children of Yoshiyahu, had a choice. They cannot claim that they didn't know what it means to serve Hashem and to create a decent and just society for people. They saw their father, Yoshiyahu, do it, and they saw each other be killed and exiled for not doing it. They just chose, for their own gain and for their own luxury and out of weakness, not to follow Hashem, not to create a good society. Leaders have great power. They literally have the fate of the nations in their hands. When they choose to abuse this power, they will be punished. But more importantly, their people will suffer. They will be led down the wrong path, taught the wrong priorities and values, and eventually become so corrupted that they too are deserving of punishment. In this parak, we read about three kings, all descendants of King David, each of whom betrayed the ideals that he was anointed to represent. Yehoahaz, Yehoiakim, and Yehoiachin are not only bad human beings, but they carry the weight of a distraught and ravaged nation on their shoulders. Thank you for studying together. Le'iloi Nishmat, Malka Esther, Bat Tzvi Yosef.